fighting. Don't give up, you just keep on fighting. Don't give up, you just keep on fighting. Even when your eyes are crying. Don't give up, you just keep on fighting. Don't give up, you just keep on fighting. Even when your eyes are crying. Yeah, for a brighter day.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
It's Radio Lost and Found on every second and fourth Thursday from 10 to midnight, right here on KBOO.
Hello, I'm your host, Donald Altman, and welcome to Pathways, where you're invited to join us with a visit with leaders in personal and cultural transformation. Many people have moved away from traditional religions, but it doesn't mean they don't want to grow spiritually. In fact, I believe there's a great hunger out there for growing our consciousness and spirituality. Fortunately, there are an array of methods available for anyone seeking this path. If you're looking for a guru, a method for finding love, a way to attain wealth, there's someone out there for you promising it, actually, on the internet. But seriously, how can you distinguish between what is truly helpful and what is potentially harmful? To help explore the subject of weeding through the many approaches to self-help is Jimmy Ryan, who has tried many diverse paths in his search for personal peace and relationship harmony. Jimmy is a seasoned American guitarist, composer, producer, arranger, and author, whose career has spanned six decades. As Carly Simon's guitarist for over two decades, Jimmy played on the iconic hits like the Golden Globe, Grammy, and Oscar-winning Let the River Run from the movie Working Girl. He also can be heard as bassist and vocalist on Carly Simon's classic Anticipation. And Jimmy played that great guitar solo on You're So Vain, one of Billboard's top 100 songs of all time. And I have to say, I have listened to that, and I love that guitar solo, Jimmy. In 2023, Jimmy was inducted into the Iowa Rock and Roll Music Association Hall of Fame and was honored with their coveted Life Achievement Award. Beyond Carly Simon, Jimmy has shared the stage and the studios with legends like Cat Stevens, Jim Croce, Elton John, James Taylor, The Doors, Tommy James, Jimmy Webb, Rod Stewart, and many, many more, including collaborating with seven Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees. Jimmy is the author of The Superstar Chronicles, Tales of Life Among Rock Royalty. His new book, which we'll explore today, is titled California Dreaming and Primal Screaming, Gurus and Psychics and Shrinks. Oh my, I love that that title and subtitle. It's an honor and a pleasure to have Jimmy Ryan here with us today. Hello, thank Jimmy, you. And welcome to the Pathways Show.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, great. I want to say and let our audience know I really enjoyed reading this book, and it was kind of like reading my own life story in a way. Somebody that's been around since the 60s and 70s, you experience a lot of these different therapy modalities. And, you know, what inspired you to write this book, and does it have anything to do with your previous book, The Superstar Chronicles?
I would say it was the flip side of The Superstar Chronicles. In that book, both of these books are written where you're sitting with me, or you actually are me in the book. They're written in the first person. And in the first book, you would be with me on the tour buses, on the stages, in the studio, in the green rooms. And you would get the experience of what it was like to perform with these amazing people like Carly and Elton and Mick Jagger and James Taylor and all these people that I had worked with. And the conversations that I had with these people, you won't find anywhere in People magazine or anywhere like that, because they were personal with those people and myself. So that book was just fun, funny, and exciting, and really cool. Now, this book is the other side of that, because what happens with so many artists is they get this gigantic rush from the fans screaming and the standing ovations and the spotlights and watching their records go flying up to the top of the Billboard charts. But everything in the universe has a best if used by date. It all stops at some point. And it can start up again, but it's those gaps where we as artists often feel a big depression because there's a void. It stops, and anything that you've been carrying since birth comes flying up in your face. Things that happen with your parents, traumas, things like that, they don't go away. You just get distracted from when all this great stuff comes. And when you get famous, the gap between them is very wide. You have these enormous highs, and then you go back to that low again, and there's a wide fall there. And some people just can't take it. You take the 27 Club, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, where it got so bad that they just OD'd on drugs.
Yeah, they couldn't tolerate that difference between the adulation and the sudden down, huh?
Exactly. Yeah. Bill Graham, the founder of the Fillmore East and the Fillmore West, the famous theaters from the 60s and 70s, had a great saying. He says, what do you do if you have everything you've ever wanted and you're still not getting off? And that, you know, yeah. I had experience, because by the time I was 21 years old, I had already had 3 hit records with my band, The Critters, and I just wasn't feeling good, and I had to do something about it. It was making me nuts. I was writing really depressing songs that I didn't like, you know, and so I started my journey with primal therapy, or at least an outshoot of primal.
You know, let's talk about the different therapies you talk sure. about in the book, and I wanted to mention something about primal therapy, just if our audience isn't fully aware of that, but it was really about releasing repressed childhood trauma. It was developed by a guy named Arthur Janoff, who wrote the book Primal Scream in 1970. And it's not really used by psychotherapists very much today, but there are people who are still proponents of it. What was your experience with primal therapy, and what introduced you to it?
What introduced me to it was I just saw an article in the New York Times book review, and it really... Book reviews don't generally make you go, oh my God, I got to do this. But this one did. I said, I have to do this. And it was just this instinctual thing that this was the answer to what I needed in that time. And it was phenomenal. Now, I didn't work with Janoff. I worked with an offshoot in New York. And in my first session, a woman, the way it works is there's a bunch of people in a group. And, you know, there's a little brief talk in the beginning. Then somebody says, I want to work. They put their hand up and say, I want to work. And what that means is you have an emotion coming up and you're ready to deal with it. And this woman just briefly described that she was very, very sad. Her husband had just died of cancer. So she said, all right, I think the expression is, I miss you, Tom. I think Tom was the name of the guy. I don't remember exactly. And it got more intense. I miss you, Tom. And she starts crying, and people are starting to tear up because
it's... Oh, so this is your first session. That must have been a kind of a surprise for you, huh?
Oh, yeah. I had no idea what I was getting into. But here's the big surprise. So she's crying, and then she's wailing. Oh, my God. I know. And she's screaming, but she's looking better and better. You know, it's working. She's starting to get all this grief and sadness out. Then all of a sudden, it's like she hit the brick wall. She stopped and her face changed. And then under her breath, I can't say it on the air here, but she let out a pretty serious curse. She cursed her husband. She said, how could you leave me like this? I have to manage everything like this. You snuggle. And I'm thinking like, whoa, am I in the Twilight Zone here? What just happened? How can
right?
So then she started really raging at him, like angry, 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 so angry, and screaming at the top of her lungs. And we're all looking at each other, holy, what's going on here? At the end, she stopped and she was completely at peace. Her face was completely clear. The tears were gone. And she just silently blessed him and said, I can now let you go. God, I'm choking up even talking.
Oh, yeah.
And I learned that feelings have layers. They're not all what you think they are. Underneath sadness oftentimes is anger. And underneath anger could be rejection. You know, it's all these
could
layers.
Could be hurt, feeling. Yeah, right.
Exactly. So what Primal Therapy did for me was help me to understand that what I'm feeling on the surface isn't the whole thing. And I had an opportunity over that 2 years to dump so much baggage.
That's really great. Yeah. And I was interested because you talked about resigning from your family at a young age, right?
Yeah.
In your 20s. And could you explain, was that part of the reason why you went to this primal group? Primal therapy.
No, it wasn't.
Group.
It wasn't in that order. I went to the primal group for worked for 2 years, and at the end of that, I realized that there wasn't this supportive love in my family that I thought there was. That we had the facade of everything is okay. We're just an American family like everyone else. No, we weren't. It was like, I don't know whether you remember the I Love Lucy show, Lucy and Desi Arnaz and the whole thing. They hated each other. but the facade was Lucy and Desi, and we're just this happy, goofy family and the whole thing. And of course, they ended up in divorce and Desi cheated on. Well, that was how my family was. On the surface, our presentation to the outside world was, we're cool, we're all American, we're the great family.
Yeah, and leave it to Beaver, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And underneath was this undercurrent of anger and rejection. And my mom, God rest her soul, my mom was a narcissist, and everything was about her. She would use the expression, mother loves you, like third person. Well, who's mother? Is that you? Who are we talking about? And my dad was just a stoic. Poor guy, I know he had some really tough upbringing. So he was just unemotional. He was just distant. And I just said, I have to get out of this. I can't be tied up in it because it's holding me back. It's like an anchor. So I resigned from the family. Now, after 4 or 5 years, and they understood what happened. They knew all the history of the whole thing. We resolved everything. They admitted how they had been, and there was apologies and hugs and the whole thing, and it was really quite wonderful. So by the time they passed, we had resolved our differences.
Well, that's beautiful. And
yeah, so now I hold nothing against them. I'm not, again, more baggage gone as a result of doing this fantastic therapy.
Yeah.
It's not easy for people to do it because you need a soundproof room. The facilitator, Barbara Scher in this case, wonderful, wonderful person and public speaker, she's passed away now, would get you to the truth, because you could start saying something, she'd get that's not really the feeling, that's not getting you anywhere, let's adjust that a little bit, what's really going on, and then you stop and you think, okay, yeah, you're right, what I really feel is, and then you work that way.
So you had a chapter talking about Krishnamurti, and that struck me. I was always a big Krishnamurti fan, read his work and him. And what was it that touched you about Krishnamurti's work?
Well, I grew up as a Catholic, and my whole world was about belief, which is interesting because beliefs are not facts. Beliefs are, you put it out there and say, all right, I'm going to get behind this, even though it's not maybe true. But we never explored that it's not maybe true. The liturgy, the dogma, it was treated like it was fact. And then I picked up a book on Krishnamurti. I don't even remember which one it was. And he said, dump your beliefs. And I went, what? Dump your beliefs? What is he talking about? And I started reading, and he started saying, it's beliefs that block the truth in life. You can't see reality if you're looking at it through a belief. So I wrote this chapter based on what I learned. Now, honestly, the caution is you don't want to dump the belief of where the fire extinguisher is or where you left the remote.
Right.
With certain where you live, your address, where you put the car key. Well, those are beliefs that are useful, but they're also not beliefs. They're facts. Anyway, yeah. So with Krishnamurti, I started holding beliefs lightly. It's okay to think, yeah, maybe this could be this way. But if you're not hanging on to it for dear life, when it changes, it's not a big deal. Oh, it wasn't that. Okay, so maybe it's this. And it just gets so much easier when you're not just clinging to this idea.
So wonderful lesson, I think, that for all of us to learn, not to grab on so tightly to some of these beliefs. And they exist in so many different ways. We're blind to them, actually. We don't even see them.
Well, that's the whole point of this book, is to help people get to the idea that they can get past this. You don't have to sit on your couch and feel miserable. Get off the couch and do something. If primal therapy isn't it for you, maybe it's Freudian, maybe it's Jungian, maybe it's hypnotic regression, but do something.
Yeah.
And this book is just all the stuff I did. It's all suggestions. Some of them don't even exist anymore, like Aston Leistring. But the idea, you can really get something good out of this, and you can change your life. You don't have to say, oh, I'm just doomed to be a miserable person. And no, you're not.
Yeah, I thought your experiences with Aston and Leistring were very interesting.
Well, the Leistring, the interesting thing with the Leistring one was there were a lot of setups. We just didn't see things coming. So we're going through the training, and there's lectures, and there's interactions with people. And then all of a sudden, the trainer says, take your name tags off. And we go, uh-oh, what's going on? And we pop our name tags, and our project says, all right, two concentric circles, and you're going to circle like this, and you're going to face each person, and you're going to either say their name, or you're going to say, I don't care enough about you to remember your name. Oh boy. And you look at people who you kind of actually like a little bit, but not enough to remember their name. So it was embarrassing, and it was humiliating, because there were a whole lot of people who didn't remember my name. So, and it tells you, if a person is important enough to have a conversation, get their name, remember it. It wouldn't kill you to try and remember the name and like that. Then the second one was just the setup from hell. So after all this like strenuous and crazy stuff and not lectures, but interactions and things, the trainer says, you're on an ocean liner. And she's just talking this soft voice, and you're having dinner with friends, and it's just wonderful. The conversation's beautiful, and you go way past, the dinner is over and you're still talking, but it's time to go. So you go to your cabin and your bed's turned down. There's little mints on the pillows, and there's a wonderful Sauvignon Blanc bottle or something like that sitting on the table. And then she hits the dais so hard, we jump through. She goes, blam! She says, the ship has hit an iceberg. You will not survive if you stay on the ship. You have to get off the boat. And we're like, whoa, 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 what's going on here? She says, two concentric circles again. You will face each person in the thing as the circles go around, and you tell each person, you go or you don't go. And you have to face this person and sentence them to death. If you didn't think, you know, if you don't know them and they weren't participating, whatever, you're telling them, I don't care enough about you, you don't get on the lifeboat, which means you drown. And we were like, holy mackerel. And it's just a lesson in caring for people, in listening to them, in hearing them, and knowing that it's not all about you. You know, and that was a big lesson for me, because for me growing up, it was all about me, because I had no love in my family. So it was always like, oh, where am I going to get love? Where am I going to get attention? And that happened. I was still kind of there going into Leistring, and I was in my 30s, I believe, then. And boy, if the primal therapy and that didn't cure it, nothing would. So these days, I try and listen, and I do listen, and I get people's names, and yeah, very valuable experience.
That's great. You know, you talked about hypnotic regression.
And oh boy,
share your experience with that. It's quite powerful.
Yeah, I had read Michael Newton's book about Life Between Lives, and he stumbled on it. He was doing a hypnotic regression with a person, trying to get them back to childhood to get a vision that was in their subconscious, that wasn't in their conscious mind, of what went wrong and why they are where they are. And then all of a sudden, the person started talking about being in the womb, and he's going, whoa, wait a minute, I didn't mean to take it that far back. Now they're talking about their before they were born, and they're having conversations with people in the spirit world. And he says, oh boy, this is good. So he started doing it with other patients, and on and on and on. And he eventually wrote a book about it, that it was so consistent, the people's description of what the life between lives was. So I read that, and I thought, gosh, this would be really good to do this. So I went on his website, and I saw that there are trainers that can do this. And I put in my zip code. There's a guy right here in town that does it. And I looked him up on Facebook, and he's friends with all my friends. So I called him up, and I said, let's do this. So he starts regressing me, and I'm back in previous lifetimes where I was a Roman Catholic priest. And I go, oh, this is shedding some light on why I was a Catholic this time and what I'm trying to work out. And it was a time of misery. I didn't like being there. I was forced by my parents to become a priest, and very, very enlightening. And then I died kind of a miserable death. I died in my house, and a big storm, a gigantic beam that was holding the roof up, got blown off, and it landed on my head and knocked me out of the game. But the real kicker was, I found out that I was a pilot in World War I on the German side. I was a German pilot and a double winger, and I was a hot shot, a good-looking guy, a ladies' man, and not a particularly nice person. And I was so full of myself, and I was up on a sortie, and I'd shot down a couple of British planes. And what I didn't realize is there was one lining up right behind me, and he absolutely shredded me, tore me to shreds, and I died in that sequence. And it was interesting because once I accepted the fact that there was no way out, there was no pain, there was no fear. I just rode my plane down straight into the side of a hill, exploded, and I was in another dimension. And it was peaceful and it was fine. But the real kicker was on the other side, I met a bunch of people with their arms folded. And they said, "What a waste of time. What the hell were you thinking? I wasn't supposed to be a pilot. I was supposed to seek enlightenment during that thing, a spiritual life." So they pulled me out. They said, no, this isn't going away. Let's get him out of there." And I think I was about 23 years old. Now, the cool thing about this was, I wasn't making this up. This came to me as a memory. I was deep in a hypnotic trance, and it was like a movie unfolding in front of me. It was fantastic. It was really, really, I actually said, because in when you're doing this, you are conscious and you are unconscious at the same time. I could talk to Billy Hunter, the hypnotist, like I was in that moment in the room, but I would also be watching this movie and being reminded of this memory. It wasn't, and I said to Billy, "I think I'm making this up." He says, "No, you can't be." He says, "This, where would you get anything like this?" He says, "Just go with it. Go with it. Tell me what you see. Tell me what you," and I started describing it. Now, my caution with hypnotic regression is it's a little bit informational. In other words, I don't think it's going to change your life. It gives you information about why things are the way they are now and why you chose to be in this lifetime doing what you're doing. And that's all very well. But if you're hurting, it's not going to stop the hurting. It's just telling you're here to work on that. So it's informational. It's like you got the shop manual for your body, you
Oh,
know?
that's a good way of looking at it. Is there
Yeah.
was there a particular therapy approach that you think has just personally helped you in relationships?
Gosh, they all did. I mean,
They all did in some way.
they all did in some way. I mean, I two marriages did fail. The first one just it just burned out. It probably wasn't great to start with, and we walked away with it, no harm. You know, it was, this isn't working. Let's not do this anymore. And that was fine. The second one, unfortunately, my wife discovered 20 years in, believe it or not, that she was a lesbian. There's no arguing with that. You can't say, "Oh, we can work it out." No, you can't.
Right.
Yeah. So that relationship had its problems, but they weren't game enders or game killers. This one was. The lesbian thing, that's. So, when she told me about that, my only response was, "Oh, you can't go, no, you don't have to do that." No, that was the reaction. I think the thing that helped relationships the most was the Transcendental Meditation, which I started in 1974, and I haven't missed a day. I
Yeah,
did.
well, let's talk a little about that.
Yeah.
And maybe we can end our conversation with
Sure.
sharing about TM and how were you introduced to that? And I thought it was interesting actually how you were introduced through a partner you had, kind of a crazy partner, right?
Yes. Yeah, I wasn't meditating or doing anything else, and I was living with this woman, and I got up. We had a loft in the apartment that kind of hung over the rest of the apartment. She was sitting under the loft, and my expression in the book is she looked like a cast iron lawn ornament. She was absolutely dead still and just sitting there with her legs crossed and her eyes closed. And I go, what is going on? Is she dead? Is she alive? What's going on? So I went into the kitchen, started making coffee, and she tiptoed in, gave me a little kiss. And I said, what was that? She says, I was meditating. I said, what's that? She says, well, it's TM, Transcendental Meditation. And she described a little bit. And then I said, that sounds great. Where can I get it? She says, well, I learned in Los Angeles. And I went, oh God, another one that's all the way on the West Coast. Oh, well, that's that. Couple of years later, I'm living in England and I see a poster for it on a store. And I said to my wife at the time, I said, I know about this. An old girlfriend told me this thing is good. It really helped her. You feel like looking into it? She says, hell yeah, let's do it. So we went to an intro lecture and it sounded great. And we both learned to meditate. Well, fast forward, we liked it enough and we both became TM teachers. I didn't stick with the teaching side because I had a very active career as a musician, and they make you wear suits. I'm not wearing
You
a
aren't going
suit.
to have anything to do with that,
I'm not wearing a suit. No,
right?
I would wear a suit when I was teaching, but time just I really did it because I wanted to find out how it worked, not just because it was doing me good. I'm a curious person. I studied engineering in college, not music. And I love to know how things work. So I did teacher training to find out how and why it worked. And I did. And I was happy. And then teaching people was kind of, maybe I'll teach some people. I don't know. But I loved it. I still love it. It's great. It's not the only meditation you can do. There are plenty of teachers like Adyashanti, Gangaji, Muji. I mean, the list goes on and on where you can learn one form of meditation or another. But the trick is to do it. That's the only trick. Anything that brings you to that state of silence is great. For me, TM did it. It was fine, but I don't say that's the only way to do it. It's a great way to do it. It's very organized and methodically taught and all that. But yeah, meditation is fantastic because it opens you up to a bigger part of you, a much, 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 much bigger part of you that is the real you. And it's very silent and it just is an observer. It doesn't interact with life and it can't be killed and it can't be created. It just is. And when you touch on that area, that beautiful area, it changes you because you know that you're eternal. It's not that you think you are or believe it. It's an experience. And it's an experience that is unborn and undying. It's the true self. And when you hit that area, you change. And I've gotten to the point where it's there a lot of the time, and it's completely eliminated my fear of death. And all the other stuff didn't do that, but this did.
Thank you, Jimmy. That's very profound, and I would love to talk longer. There's a lot more we could explore, but we've run out of time for
We run out
today.
of time. Okay.
Let's be sure to tell our listeners where they can get your information about your work and music and your books. And rampagemusic.com is your website. And that's Rampage Music, one word, Rampage music.com. Is that right?
That's correct.
And then there's the publisher website for your new book, which is New Haven Publishing LTD
Right.
dot com. Okay, and that's where you can learn more about Jimmy's book and work. So, for those who tune into the Pathway Show late, this is your host, Donald Altman, author of the award-winning spiritual adventure novel Travelers. My Simply Mindful book series includes the newly released Simply Mindful Reflections, plus Simply Mindful Resilience, Simply Mindful Meal by Meal, the Simply Mindful Coloring Book, and Simply Mindful, a 7-week course and personal handbook for mindful living. Information about my other books, courses, and CDs can be found at mindfulpractices.com. In a second, I'll tell you how you can rewind and replay this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast. Today, we've been visiting with Jimmy Ryan, a seasoned guitarist, composer, producer, arranger, and author. I want to say thank you to all our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed via KBOO FM, Sunday mornings at 8:30 USA Pacific Time. Podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com, and that's spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes and other free podcast servers. This is Donald Altman reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and podcasts. Thanks again to Jimmy Ryan, and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.
KBOO, Portland, on 90.7 FM. K282BH, Philomath, on 104.3 FM.